Good afternoon. It is 12:02 on a beautiful Friday afternoon. I'm Eric Scott, and unfortunately, Jeb Bradley will not be with us this afternoon. He is elsewhere. But with me, of course, is the effervescent Brody Deshays, state representative and school committee member. Thanks for coming in. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Eric. I'm always happy to be on these shows every Friday to let folks know in the area what we're doing down in Concord, what we're doing on the campaign trail, and how we're serving them and ensuring that they get the best government that they deserve.
Okay. One of the things I wanted to start up before we get into your agenda, I wanted to talk a little bit about what we mentioned briefly at the top of the show, House Bill 1178, which the governor signed.
Yep. I was very happy to see Governor Sununu sign House Bill 1178.
Now, that bill, correct me if I'm wrong, prohibits New Hampshire from enforcing federal gun laws.
Correct. It prohibits New Hampshire it doesn't prohibit New Hampshire from enforcing federal gun laws. It prohibits New Hampshire from enforcing unconstitutional federal gun laws or executive orders, right?
Okay.
So that's something that, you know, a little bit more specific, because some people are saying that it's just, you know, willy-nilly that it's any gun law. It's specifically unconstitutional gun laws. And not only that, though, but it doesn't prevent New Hampshire law enforcement from aiding federal law enforcement if they have an issue where there's some kind of standoff, right? State law enforcement can still provide mutual aid. And the AG's office is going to be writing some kind of memo to clearly explain to every law enforcement agency in this state what exactly the expectations are of that law and how to properly abide it to protect people's Second Amendment rights. I mean, that's huge. New Hampshire is a state with a high percentage of gun owners and with some of the lowest crime rates in all of America. New Hampshire gun owners are responsible. They understand how to use a firearm properly. They understand how to use it safely. And we have low regulation because of that case, right? We don't want to erroneously hinder someone's ability to practice their Second Amendment right. We don't do it for the First Amendment. We don't do it for any of the other amendments. So why do we treat the Second Amendment in such a different way? And yes, there's a balance of the needs of the public interest and, you know, of individual liberties, but I lean more on the side that the individual liberties, when it comes to constitutional amendments, that they should take priority in the majority of cases, that we should make sure that people, that their rights aren't hindered specifically to the Second Amendment and the First Amendment, all the other amendments. That's why they're in the Constitution, right? The founders, or, you know, people who came later who amended the Constitution that added other rights, like, for example, women's suffrage. They found those rights were so inherent to our ability to participate in a democracy, to our ability to live in this republic, to our ability to procure our inalienable rights, that they were worth putting into our Constitution, etched in stone, non-debatable. I think that's a huge reason why the New Hampshire House, why I proudly voted for it, why Representative McDonald proudly voted for it, why Senator Jeb Bradley voted for it, and why the governor ultimately signed the bill into law, is because federal overreach into a state issue shouldn't be considered acceptable, shouldn't be allowed. And our state law enforcement, our state workers shouldn't be required and binded by federal law completely unrelated to what New Hampshire is doing to basically do the bidding of the federal government, especially unfunded. The federal government constantly passes all these laws that are arguably unconstitutional, all these unfunded mandates, and then it's on the state of New Hampshire to enforce them, when in reality, one, it becomes nearly impossible to enforce them, and two, it doesn't keep our state any safer. All it does is it limits the rights of those who are law-abiding citizens to keep and bear arms within state and federal laws. So I think it was a great step in the right direction for gun owners in New Hampshire and for everyone.
So when you said that prevents the state from enforcing unconstitutional laws, does a particular law have to be declared unconstitutional by a court before this law would kick in?
I'm not 100% entirely sure,
okay,
Eric, but I do know that the AG's office is looking at this very stringently, and they will come up with some kind of guidance document to help folks understand, just like what the Department of Education did with some of the changes to education and what can and can't be taught. You know, we have good department heads that are able to work with local agencies and local government to be able to really explain what exactly the expectations are, right? And we have to remember, New Hampshire is a Dillon Rule state. So as much as we love to keep local control, I'm a huge, huge supporter of local control. That's the New Hampshire way. That's how we protect the New Hampshire advantage. But there are times when the state government does step in and say, well, there are some basic expectations and guidelines that we expect local governments or local bureaucracies to adhere to. So then everyone's on the same playing field, no matter what community they live in New Hampshire. And so this was one of those examples where there were fears by Granite Staters or fears by state lawmakers that the Biden administration, how they've really been quite hostile to gun owners, really been quite hostile to the Second Amendment, that with the writing of a pen that law enforcement in New Hampshire would be required to enforce gun laws that were arguably unconstitutional. And we stepped in and said, if the federal government is going to try to push unconstitutional changes to someone's right to practice their Second Amendment rights, then it's going to have to be the federal government that takes on those responsibilities. It shouldn't be something that's an unfunded mandate onto the state of New Hampshire.
Okay. All right. It is 12:08. Good afternoon. We are talking with Brody DeShays, state representative and school committee member of Wolfboro and Tuftonboro.
I'm state representative of Wolfboro.
Okay.
Currently. I'm running for election, right? Because re-election, Carroll 6 has been redistricted. So right. Carroll County has 8 different state rep districts. I serve currently as the incumbent with Representative McDonald. We're running as a ticket in Carroll County's 6th district. And as we run for re-election, the district that we're being elected to represent will be Wolfboro and Tuftonboro. So currently, our existing district under the previous map is Wolfboro. We're running for re-election in Wolfboro and Tuftonboro. And for school board, I serve at large for Governor Wentworth Regional School District, which is Wolfboro, Tuftonboro, Brookfield, Ossipee, Effingham, New Durham.
Okay, so, now I got it.
Okay, so currently incumbent, represented this term Wolfboro, running for re-election as an incumbent. Carroll County 6th District is still here. They're adding the town of Tuftonboro, so I'm running for re-election in Wolfboro and Tuftonboro. Not currently Tuftonboro's representative yet, right? I've taken on some of the responsibilities. I've gone to their board of selectmen and talked with them. Have told them, everyone in Tuftonboro that I've spoken to, whether it's publicly putting on Facebook, publicly at the Tuftonboro Board of Selectmen meeting, saying that, you know, once they redistricted, that I view Tuftonboro residents as, you know, people that I want to represent, people who I would, you know, be honored to represent, and that they would get the same services and the same priorities as people in Wolfboro did, because I think it's important that people know that I'm willing to take on the responsibilities and the role of state representative even before I am their state representative, as I did when I ran in Wolfboro back in 2020. And doing that in 2022, there's been some interesting things written in the newspaper that my one of Representative McDonald's and I's primary opponents has had pushed in the newspaper, which is saying that somehow I've misled the public, saying that I'm running for re-election in Wolfboro and Tuftonboro. Look, Carroll County 6th District, after redistricting, is Wolfboro and Tuftonboro. I'm an incumbent of Carroll County 6th District. I'm running for re-election in Wolfboro and Tuftonboro. Do I represent Tuftonboro in an official capacity directly yet? No. Arguably, though, I've represented all 1.4 million Granite Staters as a state representative, because this state government, right, and every state representative makes decisions on behalf of everyone. So technically, I've indirectly represented Tuftonboro, but I'm currently directly representing Wolfboro. But you know, it's kind of interesting to see that as an attack, that someone steps up, takes up a leadership role, says, I'm willing to serve, and even before I'm your state representative, provide you with all the same services and, you know, the same, all ears open, you know, ready to listen, ready to serve, ready to support, and that that your primary opponent would attack you for that. And I find it very strange. I find it also very telling of what kind of priorities my primary opponent has. It seems as if Her priorities are kind of out of line with what people expect. People in Wolfboro and Tuftonboro expect someone to be showing up day one, straight to business, not getting all caught up in the muck and the guck of the politics of it all. And it's so ironic to, you know, to try to attack me as some kind of career politician after serving one term as a volunteer representative, or currently 6 months as a volunteer school board member and not even being eligible to run for a higher office. I'm not eligible. I'm not constitutionally eligible to run for a higher office. So this idea that I'm climbing this ladder, it's not even constitutional. I can't climb the ladder. There is no ladder to climb either. And
there's an age limit, isn't there?
There's an age limit. Right. So it's just kind of crazy to hear that. But not only that, though, Eric, I have no interest. I'm happy where I am right now with my fiance, trying to start a family, trying to buy a home. I'm happy where I am in Wolfboro. I'm happy with the current responsibilities that I have. I'm happy with serving the people of Wolfboro, and I would love the honor to also serve the people of Tuftonboro. I'm very content with balancing that with my work life and, you know, working and bringing a different perspective to Concord. Concord's broken. When I got there, I was like, I know Concord's broken, but maybe there's ways to fix it. It's still broken. We still need people who are willing to work with anyone and any party to be able to fix problems like, you know, affordable prescription drug prices, property tax relief, you know, creating the proper business climate, growing revenues, making smart investments into Granite Staters, into local communities, infrastructure, which is huge and will help decrease property taxes for property taxpayers, supporting education, but not just public education. I'm a proud supporter and I'm strongly supporting public education, and people can read on my website what exactly I've done to support public education. But I also believe in school choice. I believe people deserve to have options, especially lower income folks who don't have the same kind of wealth and ability to be able to send their kids to private schools. And I think it's more than fair to say, listen, do you want to homeschool? Do you want to send your kid to a private school? Do you not have the same amount of wealth as other people who have that opportunity? And provide them that opportunity with a new state program that I voted for. So, I mean, I really look at this. I'm really policy and goals driven, right? Mm-hmm. I'm policy and goals driven, unlike, you know, politicians out there. I view myself as a public policy maker, right? I'm a public policy maker. I work on behalf of people in Wolfboro, and hopefully after I'm reelected, people of Wolfboro and Tuftonboro, to make good, comprehensive public policy, to continue working with Governor Chris Sununu and to continue working with State Senator Jeb Bradley and Representative McDonald to bring about the best government that people deserve, right? A limited government, an efficient government, a government that's prioritizing bringing more resources locally to Wolfboro and Tuftonboro. I fought to bring over $1 million worth of money to Wolfboro, nearly that much to Tuftonboro too, right? Based on my votes, I've helped bring resources to Tuftonboro. It's that kind of record that shows leadership, right? What shows a lack of leadership is to go on a radio show over in Meredith or Laconia that doesn't even come in on the radio waves to Wolfboro, and to just start spouting off and talk about issues you don't understand or comprehend, like John and I's primary opponent has done. And to me, that shows a lack of leadership. It shows a lack of vision, right? If you're not willing to take a stand for something, then what are you willing to fall for? That's always my biggest question. I know where I stand on the issues, and I'm willing to defend my positions time and time again, whether it's, you know, whether it's legitimate attacks or illegitimate attacks. But I mean, at this point, it's July 15th, and the negative politicking has already begun. And I get why, right? When you're behind, when you're trying to play catch up, when you have low name recognition, you have to go on the attack. I get it. But there's a way to respectfully draw, you know, and show those differences, those key differences between yourself and your political opponents, and to say here are the main things where we differ, and to really, you know, show those, to juxtapose two different candidates and to do it in a way that the public approves of. And there's a way to just do it where you're just basically running around, just running a smear campaign. And it's no surprise this happened for school board and voters in Tuftonboro and Wolfboro. They overwhelmingly rejected it. I mean, I won 70% of the vote in Wolfboro and Tuftonboro during the school board election, right? Just Wolfboro and Tuftonboro. Mm-hmm. Overall, throughout the district, it was about 60%. But because people saw, when they saw how nasty and visceral the negative campaigning became, it shuts them down. It turns them off. It really does. And I think that's part of the issue of why Concord's broken, why Washington's broken, and why we have so many problems in this country, is because people are too quick to say, you know, to campaign negatively and to be constant negative Nancy and to really, you know, go on the attack constantly and to not really establish what they stand for. And then they get to government and they just go along to get along. They go along to get along. They're not prioritizing their constituents, and they just become a proxy vote for the state reps and the special interest groups that have gotten them into that position. I will never be a proxy vote for the people that get me into power, except for the people of Wolfboro and Tuftonboro, right? I run my own campaign. I run my own priorities. I have my own priorities, and the people of Wolfboro and Tuftonboro, in this reelection campaign, they are my priority, and their opinions and what they believe the government should do are my priorities, right? I'm not running around going to the other side of the lake to campaign negatively on, you know, a host of different issues that, you know, quite frankly, my primary opponent didn't understand.
It sounds frustrating.
I mean, it is frustrating, Eric, when you really look at this kind of stuff, because, you know, it's pretty clear that it's pretty clear who has recruited Representative McDonald and I's primary opponent. It's pretty clear who they associate with. People in Wolfboro have approached me and talked about it and said, wow, I had no idea that those kinds of groups are starting to get involved in the politics in this area, or that you and John's opponent would be campaigning with those groups. And I'm also quite frankly surprised too, as someone who was formerly her friend. But that's just politics. That's how it is. People do strange things to get to power. I mean, you know, whether I win or lose re-election, I care and love Wolfboro and Tuftonboro as much as I did the day before. And I'm still going to advocate for them. I'm going to take on all the responsibilities still, without any, you know, without the official titles, because you don't need an official title to be a leader in a community. You don't need an official title to advocate for people. You don't need an official title to look out for your neighbor's backs, right? All you need to have is the fortitude and the leadership to just stand up and to say what you believe and to ask people, you know, is this something that we should do something about? And if people say yes, to do something about it. That's what it's about. It's not about, you know, constantly negatively campaigning. It's not about vague statements put on a landing page of a website, or, you know, no stances taking in the grunter, or things like that. I mean, I know where I stand. People know where I stand. I have a record that I think is worth defending, and I have goals for the next session that I think are worth achieving, and that I hope that the people of Wolfboro and Tuftonboro agree with me that those goals that I have, like property tax relief, decreasing business taxes, maximizing revenue, making New Hampshire's economy healthy, fighting back against inflation, you know, working with the governor to deliver fuel assistance while the Biden administration is completely, you know, looks like a turtle on its back, flailing with its legs in the air, going to the Saudi crown prince and begging for oil. There are things that we have going on in New Hampshire, defending the Second Amendment, promoting school choice and educational options, supporting public education and making it better, right? Not just increasing funding, but also making the overall product better. I mean, these are things that I have a proven record of supporting. And, you know, it doesn't matter what anyone says otherwise, and it doesn't matter who's coaching them, whether it's, you know, free state organizations like the New Hampshire Liberty Alliance, which is opposed to qualified immunity, which has supported policies that would take away funding from the police. I find it completely strange that Representative McDonald's and I, a primary opponent, would support such policies and would support such a group. I find it really strange too that they are sign-waving today with a group that supported Governor Chris Sununu's impeachment, that wanted to see Governor Chris Sununu be impeached after a number of things that he did in his leadership role, and that recruited Senator Jeb Bradley's primary opponent. I mean, you know, this group calls themselves We the People, you know, New Hampshire, and I don't know how and what ways they're advocating for, you know, the people of Wolfboro or Tuftonboro. The only thing I've seen them advocate for is impeaching Governor Chris Sununu and, you know, trying to get Jeb Bradley out of office, Senator Jeb Bradley. And if you're a Republican who's, you know, being supported by these groups, I think people in Wolfboro especially, but I also Tuftonboro, are going to look around and say, you know, what is really your agenda? Because if you're constantly attacking incumbents without any kind of policies that you're showing that you support, and if you're associating with groups that are trying to unseat Senator Jeb Bradley and that are trying to push for the impeachment of Governor Chris Sununu, and even going as far as, you know, trying to have it supporting, you know, initiatives like New Hampshire seceding from the Union, the most anti-America thing I could ever think of. I mean, I think people, and from what I've heard, campaigning, knocking doors, putting up yard signs this early, people really question the judgment of anyone who's trying to be elected to public office who would associate with groups like that and who isn't taking a stand on specific issues. They kind of look around, they say, I'm not sure what that candidate stands for, but I see the groups that they associate with, and those groups are anti-police, anti-Chris Sununu, anti-Senator Jeb Bradley. They're trying to promote primary challenges against Chris Sununu and Jeb Bradley. And candidates for any public office that are willing to go and seek their support, get their endorsement, quite frankly, from both those groups, and be an official member of one of those groups. I mean, people in Wolfboro and Tuftonboro, they're goals-oriented. They want someone who's going to actually deliver a good result from government, make government smaller, more efficient, work more reliably, and get out of their hair. And it's not, you know, it's not those kinds of fringe issues like trying to impeach the governor that they're really looking for, I think, in a candidate in this state, in this Republican primary in Carroll County's 6th District for state rep.
Okay. Brody Deshaies is our guest today. Senator Bradley is on vacation. It's 12:23. So you would mention at the top of the show you had a couple of things on your mind. What's on your agenda?
Well, I think that was a big thing that I wanted to kind of, you know, discuss. That it's really baffling to see people, you know, throw around the term rhino, right? Which I'm not a rhino. The people who are libertarians,
were you called one?
Not yet, but I know it's coming. You know what I mean? But it's one of those things where you know, you take endorsements from libertarian organizations and you run as a Republican but supported by libertarians that tried to have New Hampshire secede from America, that tried to impeach the governor. And then I look at, you know, the organizations that support myself and represent McDonald, like the New Hampshire Police Benevolence Association, right? Mm-hmm. One of New England's largest police associations, the New Hampshire Police Association, New Hampshire's largest organization of law enforcement. You know, former Representative Harold B. Parker, you know, former Assistant Majority Leader of the Republican Caucus in the House, former State Representative Steve Schmidt, former State Representative and Assistant Majority Leader, you know, Registry of Deeds, Lisa Scott, Republican from Sandwich, you know, Bob Murray, Tuftonboro Board of Selectmen, a good, common sense, reasonable guy. Who really, you know, was recently elected, but really wants to fight for Tuftonboro's interests and make sure that the town of Tuftonboro is ran efficiently, effectively, and properly. Brad Harriman, you know, Wolfboro Board of Selectmen. Dave Seneca, Wolfboro Board of Selectmen. Luke Freudenberg, Wolfboro Board of Selectmen. Sean Coop, Wolfboro Police Commissioner. I mean, Beverly Bruce, you know, huge community leader in the town of Tuftonboro. Bob Byrd, beloved guy in the town of Wolfboro. I've personally been endorsed too by the Professional Firefighters of New Hampshire. And you look at these groups and these local formerly elected leaders or currently elected leaders, and they're not the kind of people that just endorse anyone. They've never endorsed anyone in state house races, but they recognized how important this race is this year, Erica, how important it is to reelect myself and Representative John McDonald in Carroll County's 6th District, right? So then we can represent and bring the voices of people in Wolfboro and Tuftonboro down to Concord and continue fighting for the things that I described to you. I mean, property tax relief, business tax relief, you know, trying to maximize our revenues, making smart investments in one-time infrastructure spending, you know, increasing the SAFE grants to make schools safer after we've seen some of the terrible things that we've seen happen at some of our schools in this country as of late. Making sure that our schools in the Governor Wentworth Regional School District are safe, and it takes the state to provide those grants. Supporting workforce training. We have a workforce shortage in the state of New Hampshire. I voted, as did Representative McDonald, for $18 million in career technical education and supporting the transportation of students to career technical centers, and that's going to be a huge thing for school districts to take advantage of. And so it's those kinds of things, those kinds of priorities. When you talk to a business owner in Wolfboro, they're getting hurt by inflation, mm-hmm. right? They want their costs down, and they want taxes decreased, and they need more employees, right? Those are the priorities of people in Wolfboro and Tuftonboro, not impeaching Governor Chris Sununu, not trying to get Senator Jeb Bradley out of office, not just going along to getting along and going on to radio shows on the other side of the lake and you know, just talking about issues that, quite frankly, don't affect the daily person in Wolfboro, Tuftonboro's lives. And quite frankly, that, you know, Representative John McDonald's and I, primary opponent, didn't even understand. It was clear from listening to that radio interview. I had to pull it up on the internet. I had to Google it. It took forever to hunt for it because someone told me about it. They said, oh, yeah, you know, it was posted on Facebook. And after listening to it, it was pretty clear that it was scripted. It was a completely scripted interview. And an interview can't be scripted. I know our discussions, Eric, are never scripted. There's no script.
We're lucky if we have 2 minutes right before air and, oh, okay, what are we talking about? Oh, okay.
Exactly. And so, I mean, you know, going onto a radio show to script something to just create a negative PR campaign because there's very little for someone to stand on, it just tells me that at a certain point, there's a certain level of desperation. And that's fine. You know, I'll take it. And I know that this is kind of, people would say, well, aren't you being a little bit negative too? And it's like, well, at a certain point, you can only take so many punches in the face until you finally, you know, at least put up your arms and say, hey, whoa, you know, can you chill out for a second?
So this sounds like a libertarian platform, what you were explaining from your opponent.
I wouldn't even call it libertarian because, you know, a libertarian would believe in more. You know, personal freedom, and there's certain stances that they've taken that doesn't support right. Personal freedom. But I mean, definitely more libertarian leaning, correct? But you know, when it comes to things like supporting, you know, like for example, and this is something that some Republicans do or don't like about me, I support gay marriage. I think people who are gay deserve the right to be able to get married.
Yeah, let them be as miserable as the rest of us.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, and I'm unsure where Representative McDonald and I primary opponents stand on that, because there is two primary opponents. It's just one isn't negatively campaigning against us, which, you know, I respect. I have admiration for someone who goes out and says, I have a message, and this is where, you know, me and my primary opponents disagree, and this is where we might agree, and, you know, just puts that out there in a respectful way and says, you know, they believe this, I believe this, this is why I'm running against them. That I have full respect for. But just going around to attack someone for the sake of attacking someone and to mislead on their record and to distort the facts is, it's not really campaigning. It's not really showing what you stand for, and it's not something that I have an interest in doing. I know what I, you know, for example, I decreased state spending. I voted to decrease state spending by 3% with Representative McDonald. We voted for $100 million in direct property tax relief by decreasing the statewide property tax. We reduced the meals and rooms tax down to 8.5%. We increased the revenue sharing and made it so then the town of Wolfboro got another about $550,000 to $600,000 in revenue from the state to offset property taxes. I voted twice to decrease business profits tax. I voted to eliminate the interest and dividends tax over 5 years, making New Hampshire officially an income tax-free state and helping protect retirees' hard-earned incomes. I voted to exempt $100 million of Paycheck Protection Program loans from state taxation. I voted to exempt 30,000 small businesses from filing taxes, right? Those are my kind of goals that I have to keep working on. I mean, over the next decade, Granite Staters will save $1 billion from the tax decreases that I voted for with Representative McDonald and State Senator Jeb Bradley. Right. I mean, I increased the amount of the amount of resources to our towns, not costs. I mean, I voted for about $70 million in highway block grants for towns and cities. I voted for $13.6 million in state aid for municipal bridges and $66 million more in state aid for municipal bridges projects in 2022. So not just once, but twice increasing the state aid for projects. And that wasn't just aid into the bridge. Into the bridge fund, which is a rotating fund that each town has their year where they come up to be able to take money from the fund, but also direct grants. For example, the town of Tuftonboro right now is having a major issue with having to fix the bridge that's on Mirror Lake. That's in Mirror Lake between Lake Winnipesaukee and the basin, right on Tuftonboro Neck. And some of the funding that I've helped provide from the state that I voted for, $125 million is going to go to the town of Tuftonboro for them to be able to use on any bridge project once they get that money from the Department of Revenue. And they're going to be able to use that money to directly invest it in fixing that bridge that needs to be fixed as soon as possible. And it's going to make it so then the burden isn't felt by property taxpayers, but instead by our revenue surplus that we created, myself, Representative McDonald, and State Senator Jeb Bradley. So, I mean, you look at these things, I'm constantly fighting and standing up for Wolfboro and indirectly Tuftonboro too. And I want to be reelected so I can continue fighting for that, so I can continue working with our state and local leaders, because I believe every dollar that I bring in to towns, right, that local leaders can invest in the best way that they see possible, because they're the closest representatives and the closest elected leaders and are the easiest to get access to and the easiest to make quick decisions on behalf of a community. So every dollar I can get to our Board of Selectmen, whether it's in Wolfboro or Tuftonboro, so then they can quickly react and make smart investments in their towns that they understand better than bureaucrats or politicians in Concord, I think is a major win. And any time that we can decrease taxes without it hurting revenues, I'm all game for it, because I haven't seen a tax that I like. Have never seen a tax that I like, Eric, and I haven't seen a tax that I'm not willing to decrease.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute. One of the things that people are going to be noticing, only because of the upcoming rate increases, is the electricity consumption tax,
mm-hmm.
or the gasoline tax, or I think there are others. I think there's a telecommunications tax as well. Those appear to be sales taxes to me, and I've never understood why New Hampshire has those.
So the electrical consumption tax was something that I remember talking with a representative from Manchester, Republican Ross Berry, because he wanted to put in a bill to decrease the electrical consumption tax. It's also something I wanted to put a bill in for too, because I was like, why is the state collecting this tiny amount of revenue? Because it really is so tiny.
It
only accounts, I believe, for 2% of our state's revenue. And it really, you look at that and you're like, 2% with the amount of surplus that we have, do we really need? I mean, we decreased our budget by 3% just cutting, you know, not by decreasing costs that weren't necessary to serving Granite Staters. And looking more into it, what was explained to me by leadership, you know, House Republicans and leadership, was that the electrical consumption tax goes to help offset some of the infrastructure investments that the state makes directly in the utility lines that everyone uses.
Mm-hmm.
So if that makes sense. So for example, large corporations that use a bunch of electricity because it's a flat tax, right, they'll pay more for the electrical consumption. So kind of the overall goal of it is, instead of having every taxpayer, whether it's in their property taxes or business taxes regularly, have to pay for upgrades to our transmission lines, which is a huge reason why New Hampshire has high electricity costs, is because of the cost of transmitting electricity. The idea is that if everyone pays a little bit, it's going to help the state invest in that. Now, I still think that there's ways for the state to decrease that tax or to relook at it and change the way that that tax operates to make it more fair and to make it cost less to the average, or to make it so then, for example, retirees are exempted from it. Retirees are people on fixed incomes, working families maybe. But as it is right now, it was a tough one to get the Ways and Means Committee, even Republican-controlled Ways and Means Committee, to really get on board with that, because of, you know, they have to really look at the reality of, well, if we decrease this revenue, where is it going to come from, right? And they have obligations that they need to fund. So it'll be something I assume we look at in the next budget, something that I would be more than happy to see how much we can decrease it within reason. But I think even more though, Eric, you touch upon something that's a great thing to talk about, which is specifically, what are we going to do about inflation? And myself and Representative McDonald actually put something in the newspaper to talk about this, right? Because we stand for something. And what we stand for is further decreasing small business taxes, recognizing that small businesses in New Hampshire are getting hit in the chin with inflation, that New Hampshire is still seeing record revenue surplus, and that we should be decreasing small business taxes. We should. And when we've decreased small business taxes every year since 2014, the state of New Hampshire has decreased small business taxes, you know, the BPT and the BET, so business profits tax and business enterprise tax. Every year we've decreased business taxes, we've seen increased revenue that's increased past what was anticipated every subsequent year. because we've stimulated our economy and we've used that surplus to further decrease business taxes and to make smart investments in Granite Staters and to deliver on property tax relief. The other thing we want to do is, after decreasing our small business taxes again in New Hampshire and stimulating our economy and growing our revenues and bringing more businesses into the state to grow our tax base, we want to use that surplus to decrease the statewide property tax and to give a larger share of the meals and rooms tax to municipalities and provide more surplus state revenue to municipalities for local infrastructure investments like we've done in the previous term, right? All those stats I was reading you about, the amount of, you know, bridge funding, highway grants, you know, property tax relief directly. I mean, those are the kinds of things that we want to make investments in, because those are going to be the things that decrease people's property taxes, which property taxes, you know, they hurt people on a fixed income, and we want to address that. And it takes growing our economy, growing our revenues to be able to make those investments. And so we want to continue doing that, you know, indirect and direct property tax. Direct property tax meaning decreasing the statewide property tax, and direct property tax relief, as in decreasing the statewide property tax, an indirect property tax relief by investing in local municipalities and giving them grants to help fund one-time infrastructure investments. Like, for example, Representative McDonald and Senator Bradley and myself all voted to help increase the amount of funding for wastewater treatment plants in the last budget. And that money is being directly used by the town of Wolfboro to fix our wastewater treatment plant and to help prevent a major property tax increase on property taxpayers here in the town of Wolfboro. And there's other things, like I mentioned, you know, the Mirror Lake Bridge over on Tuftonboro Neck, that kind of money that, you know, we help deliver to local communities like Tuftonboro to help decrease their property taxes. Because if that revenue didn't come from the state, that infrastructure need isn't going to go away. It's going to be property taxpayers that pick up the tab. And we think when the state has, you know, surplus revenue, that the best thing to do with that surplus revenue is to directly return it to the taxpayers. And one way to do that is to help fund one-time infrastructure projects. The last thing that I've discussed, and I know Senator Bradley has discussed it, I know Governor Chris Sununu kind of disagrees with us on this, but I still think it's something that's worth considering doing, is temporarily decreasing the state's gas tax. I know some people say it's gimmicky, but hear me out. When we have record surplus and people are looking at the gas pump and saying, wow, this is insane how high gas taxes are, there's one thing that we can do in this state to fix that issue. Well, two things. One, increasing the domestic production of energy in our state and making smart investments in that, which we've done. And two, temporarily decreasing the gas tax for a time while gas prices are high, and then phasing the tax back in, right, as gas taxes decrease, right, and using our surplus to offset that. Because people, a lot of people don't realize what the gas tax goes towards. Gas tax in New Hampshire is actually officially named the gas toll, right? And the idea is that everyone everywhere in the state that drives on state roads, when they go to the gas pump, they pay a toll for using the roads, right? So they pay, I believe New Hampshire's is 18 cents, if I'm not mistaken.
It's 18 and change. Yeah.
I think it's 18 and a half cents per gallon of gas. And that 18 and a half cents per gallon of gas goes towards paying for the roads. It goes directly into the highway trust fund. Now, with all this revenue surplus that we have, we could decrease that gas tax for a temporary amount of time and put that revenue surplus directly into the highway trust fund.
Right.
And to help pay for the gas toll.
Here's the way I'm looking at it. And those are all very good things, don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. But let's take, for instance, Mr. Kelly, who owns the Yum Yum shop here in town.
Correct.
The guy's trying to run a business, mm-hmm. you know, and price of flour is going up. The price of sugar is going up. The price of vegetable shortening is going up. Edible oils are way up.
Yes.
We bought a bottle of peanut oil to do some frying in, and I was shocked at how much it had gone up.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Orange juice has gone up quite a bit. Margarine was another one that was like, wow, at that price, I might as well have butter because I like it better anyway. But what I'm saying is all of these things kind of, they take over your thinking. And to be honest, even if, let's say, you guys come up with a 10-cent reduction in the gasoline tax, that's great, but that's not going to help me when I go to the supermarket or when I'm sitting down with my invoices trying to figure out, you know.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, it will decrease shipping cost, but probably right. not enough to the point where you're going to say, I mean, and that's the whole thing with this inflation. It was when people asked state lawmakers, what can you do? Well, I can decrease, you know, I can help decrease business taxes. So then businesses, you know, that their profit margins are kind of protected, right? Because that's part of the reason why they're increasing it, right? The supermarkets don't want to increase their prices. No, it's don't. Just they don't want to operate on a loss, because if they start operating and they start losing money quarter after quarter, they will go out of business.
Right. No one says they should operate at a loss.
Exactly. And so the goal is these are the three priorities that I have is further. I mean, one is further decreasing business taxes. So then that helps them handle the increased costs, because they buy the goods, right, to sell and to resell mm-hmm. to people in the community and everything. And if their taxes are more fair and they're more reasonable, then it's going to be easier for them to not have to increase their prices. Restaurants too, you know, the Yum Yum Shop, Peter Kelly and everything who manage the Yum Yum Shop. We don't want them to be passing on that cost to consumers. We want to try to limit that. Now, it's pretty tough because the Biden administration isn't addressing this really important issue right now. They seem to be asleep at the wheel. But in the state of New Hampshire, we're trying our hardest with what we have in our toolbox. And our toolbox is more limited for dealing with nationwide and international inflation, right? Mm-hmm. It's limited in that capacity. But with what the tools we have, what I've kind of laid out to you just then, Eric, is what we can do. It's what we can do starting once we get back to session in January. Those are the things that we can do to help push back against inflation. Heating fuel relief is another thing, too, that the federal government has helped provide, and something that we're going to look at the next state budget to increase. But, I mean, really, it's going to take further decreasing business taxes to make it so then businesses aren't losing money and they don't have to increase their prices as much. You know, using as much surplus as we can to decrease property taxes, right? Because if we can decrease property taxes or prevent them from increasing to crazy exorbitant amounts, we're going to try to help people weather inflation. Can we reverse the clock? At that point, it's too late. The Fed and the Biden administration, they had the opportunity to handle this issue in a comprehensive way probably about 12 months ago when we first started to see inflation irk up to 5 to 6%, right? When we first started to see GDP growth start to decrease, right? There was an opportunity for the Biden administration. At this point now, they just need to put out the fire, right? They need to put out the fire, and they need to put it out fast, and it's going to take time to put out this fire. But on the state end, there are things that we can do within our control that I want us to do, that I'm going to push for us to do. And these are the kitchen table issues that really matter to people in Wolfboro. Not seceding from the union, right? Not campaigning with organizations that want to impeach Governor Chris Sununu. No. People are worried about inflation, and you're right, Eric. They worry about it now, and they want to know what all lawmakers are going to do about inflation. They're worried about crime, too. Right, Eric?
Yeah.
They're worried about crime. And we're seeing an issue in this country where even the state of New Hampshire, even under Republican control, we couldn't get a bill passed to make it so then people go to a bail hearing in front of a judge that have committed crimes like murder, rape, domestic violence, right? And it was groups like the New Hampshire Liberty Alliance that me and Representative McDonald's primary opponent is a part of. It's those kinds of groups that prevented us from passing that bill to make New Hampshire safer, right? They did not want to see bail reform, something that Senator Jeb Bradley and myself worked so hard to try and champion. A major goal of Governor Chris Sununu, when he gave his State of the State at the beginning of this year, back in January, it was the second thing he listed as a priority for him to sign into law. Bail reform, making it so then less violent offenders are being caught and released back into the public. It is Free Stater groups and people who are supported by groups like the New Hampshire Liberty Alliance, and people who are actively members of the New Hampshire Liberty Alliance, like Representative McDonald and my opponents, both of them, who have fought us against making New Hampshire safer. And it's the reason why law enforcement organizations have lined up in an unprecedented way to support us in this statehouse race. And in a number of other statehouse races, they're starting to do it too, because they recognize that these primaries matter. The Republican primary in Wolfboro and Tufton Borough matters, because the question is, are you going to get candidates that are worried about local issues, that are worried about empowering local officials and delivering them more revenue to decrease your property taxes, to maximize investments in your local infrastructure? Are you going to be electing, you know, candidates that have actually voted for real property tax relief to decrease the statewide property tax? Are you going to be voting for candidates that have decreased business taxes to help businesses, you know, compete and survive in this inflationary period? Are you going to support candidates that have fought to defend our police, not defund them, and have fought to make New Hampshire a safer state and to reform bail, to make it so then people who have been, you know, who have been charged with rape, murder, you know, other sexual crimes, child exploitation, right, that those people go to a bail hearing in front of a judge instead of just being released within 72 hours, right? That's outrageous that as a Republican legislature we couldn't get that passed. And that's really what's on the ballot on September 13th, this upcoming September, right? That's what Representative McDonald and myself, that's what we're fighting for, and that's what we stand for, and that's what we know that people want. They want people fighting inflation. They want people fighting costs. They want a government that's smaller, more efficient, more effective. They want people using revenue surplus to invest it in property tax relief to actually help prevent their property taxes from increasing, and ultimately the goal will be to try to decrease property taxes, at least property tax rates. And they want people who are fighting for a safer New Hampshire because our liberties are so important. It's so important, the freedoms that we have in the state, Second Amendment, freedom to speak, you know, freedom of religion. But without proper protection, without proper security, without the government being able to promise people that they are not going to be hurt and that the same people that hurt them, you know, 3 days before aren't going to be re-released to hurt them again, if we don't have that basic security, it becomes a lot more difficult to practice our liberties, right? Government helps us secure our liberties. They're inherent, they're inalienable, but without the government and without supporting our law enforcement, our first responders are on the front lines every day putting their lives on the line, it becomes nearly impossible for us to practice our liberties, to procure our freedoms, and to be able to live safely and to prosper economically, you know, within our families and to start a family. So, I mean, those are the things that I'm fighting for. And when you're campaigning in a part of a group that wants to end qualified immunity, I mean, let me tell you something, Eric. Ending qualified immunity would create a mass exodus of police officers and of all law enforcement, of all public workers, right? Of any background, of any profession, firefighters, DPW, police, state troopers, you name it. They would leave the profession because being named personally liable for doing your job, that's completely insane. It's completely insane. It would also cause our insurance rates to increase because we'd have a less safe community. It would cause Primex insurance, which is our municipal insurance rates, to increase, which would further increase property taxes. It would also open the floodgates to litigious lawyers and litigious citizens to sue towns in an erroneous way repeatedly, and to basically extort towns for settlements. And that's going to increase property taxes too. That's what that policy would do. And it's really crazy that in a Republican primary, that not every Republican is behind protecting qualified immunity. But, you know, I'm going to keep fighting to make sure that we support our police and that we support public safety, that we have those basic protections, that we support our first responders. And that's a huge message of my campaign.
Now, at what point does, and I just completely lost my train of thought. We were talking about, refresh my memory.
Public safety, decreasing costs, kitchen table issues that matter to Granite Staters, not seceding from the union.
Yes,
or being funded by secessionists. Or,
all of those things.
You know, impeaching the governor. I just can't believe that someone running in a Republican primary would campaign with pro-impeachment groups that have pushed for Governor Kristen Noem's impeachment. He's done a great job as a governor. You know, I mean, to each their own. If someone thinks that their message is to be anti-Governor Kristen Noem in a Republican primary, all the power to them. But I stand by our governor, right? I stand by our governor, and I think our governor is doing a great job, and I want to keep working with him.
Okay. It is 12:50 here on WASR. Brody DeShays is our guest today, state representative and school committee member. I'm wondering, with all of the, and this is probably I'm not sure you'd be able to answer this question or not, but has there been some talk about possibly making mass shootings a specific more severe kind of crime?
Haven't heard that talk yet from anyone in Concord, but
I'm just, you know, I'm thinking that.
I think it's worth something considering. Yeah, people who commit acts of terrorism and mass shootings, right? And a mass shooting in many ways is an act
and
of terrorism.
You should forego your right to live in a civilized society if you're going to act like that.
And that was St. Thomas Aquinas's his argument for the death penalty was, you know, there are certain transgressions against the society that someone commits that when they commit it, and if they actively know they're committing it, right? They actively plan and know that they're committing it, it's pretty implicit that they understand that they're forgoing their right to live in a civilized society. And there's two things that you can do, either capital punishment or banish them to some far remote island, right?
Which would not be such a bad idea if you ever saw the old movie Escape from New York, where they turned the island of Manhattan into a maximum security prison.
I've never seen that movie.
It's great.
I've never heard
Kurt
about
Russell's
that.
In it. Adrian Barbeau is in it. It's a great popcorn movie. But that was my point. Is the movie says the rules are simple. Once you go in, you don't come out. But on the other hand, people are going to say, "But do I want to keep this guy in prison for the next 50, 60 years at Lord knows how many dollars a year?" So I mean.
Well, Eric, this is the real question is, you know, and this is my whole thing with the bail reform, right? This is my whole axe to grind with some of these, you know, and I say quote-unquote liberty groups, right? Mm-hmm. These libertarian organizations that represent McDonald's and my opponents, you know, associate with and support the policies that they support. At a certain point, there's a specific... I'm trying to think about how to phrase this in a respectful way.
Oh, you don't have to be respectful to me. I'm used to it.
No, I'm yeah. Thank you, Eric, for that. But I mean, there's a certain amount of security that's needed in a society, and you kind of mentioned, you know, there's also a certain amount of justice that's needed. That's kind of the word I'm looking for. There's a certain amount of justice that's needed, right? And the justice system, you can't put a price on justice, right?
Right.
Justice is an inherently good value. It's inherently something that all public officials should kind of seek, especially in criminal justice, right? It's in the name. We want our justice system to actually be just. I don't think it's just to have the state and to have taxpayers, even taxpayers who their family member was murdered by someone who's incarcerated, to have those people who are the victims of a crime to pay for the lifetime incarceration of the person who's either killed their family member or who has who's transgressed against a whole host of people. Like, for example, you look at the issue with the murder, right? And someone who has committed a premeditated murder, knowing that they were actively, you know, in killing someone, you know, that's a terrible, heinous thing to do, especially if you premeditate and you plan it all and everything. If it's not something that's in the heat of the moment where you're trying to defend yourself, for example, that's different. But murder in the strict sense to plan to kill someone, to end their life, right, for no justifiable reason, to murder them. That's a terrible thing. And to expect the family of the person who was murdered to pay taxes to support that person being sustained in a jail, I don't think that's a just thing to do. I don't think it's just a just system to, for example, with the current bail system in New Hampshire, I don't think it's just for someone who has, you know, been not accused, when they are being
indicted,
I guess, for lack of a better term, when someone has been, you know, when they have evidence that someone's committed a rape and they've had to arrest them and everything, and then they get released within, you know, 3 days, because that's how it currently works in law in the state. They get released 3 days later. I don't think it's just to let that person out that quickly, you know, while they're pending their court date. I also don't think it's just to the people who were, quite frankly, who were the subject of that crime, right?
Yeah.
they now, you know, they are walking around without any basic sense of security. They can't go and speak their mind in the public forum. They can't go and practice their First Amendment right. They can't do a number of other things that everyone else is allowed to do because their person who committed the crime against them could be out walking around the public, and that's not just either. And so I think we have to really look at, we have to look at our public justice system, you know, our criminal justice system, I should say, and we have to really look at what is just. What is just? And is it just to let violent criminals out after 3 days, you know, after just a quick bail hearing, not even in front of a judge? Is it just to make it so then the people, you know, the families of those who have been murdered have to pay for the murderer's life in prison, pay to sustain them, pay for their food, their clothing, their housing? And I kind of look at that and I say, to me, that doesn't seem just. It doesn't seem like a just thing at all.
Well, the alternative is the death penalty. And I've heard it said many times, even though I have no absolute proof of this, that it's more expensive than housing somebody.
It might be more expensive than housing someone, but again, I don't think you can put a price on justice. I don't think you can. I do not think you can put a price on real justice, on people being protected from criminals and on families or the victims of crimes, you know, the families of victims of crimes or victims of crimes being properly protected and being treated fairly by the criminal justice system, by their government. Right?
So is justice a governmental function, and should it be offloaded to private contractors?
Are you talking about like the
private
jails?
I know
the state of New Hampshire. I don't think we have any private jails.
No, I don't think we have them here. No.
So I mean, but that's a. I mean, I don't know entirely that much about the private jail system. It would be something I'd be willing to learn about if it was an issue in New Hampshire. But to my understanding, it's not. It's more of a federal issue. It's typically the federal government that contracts. You know, that does contract in some southern states and everything. But I mean, here's more of my priority, because you talk about, you know, the cost. And I think at the end of the day, I think there is a higher cost that you can't put dollar amounts on when someone, for example, like in the city of Manchester, I use this example all the time, a woman, there was a domestic violence call, and, you know, there were some pending charges against a gentleman who, you know, and they were trying to collect more evidence to find out, you know, what exactly had happened, and if this man had hurt his spouse. And, you know, she said, you know, it was pretty clear that she had, but they said, we, you know, there's only so much time, and we have only 3 days to prove this. And if we don't prove it properly, then a bail commissioner is going to let this person back out into the public. And so they have the bail hearing. I think it was within 48 hours. And the state had all this evidence and said, here's, and the bail commissioner said, no, that's not enough, and let this guy back out into the public. And then the guy beat the crap out of his spouse again.
Yeah, it happened.
24 hours after that. So within a 72-hour period, this woman has been subjected to a violent crime from the same man. And the state government could have said, hold on, you know, this person probably committed that kind of violent crime against their spouse, and they can't be released until we finish collecting this evidence, until we can really verify that it's safe to release them back into the public, that there's a public interest in it. And currently right now in state law in New Hampshire, you know, because Senator Bradley and myself and the New Hampshire Chiefs of Police Association couldn't get the bill passed, we still have this catch and release of violent criminals, and it's just unacceptable, and it's not just, and there's not really a price that we can put on that, and there's no price that we can put on the kind of trauma that woman and her child and their families are dealing with.
Right.
But it's something that it's worth the state stepping in and saying, hold on, we need to make it so that these violent criminals aren't just being released back into the public to commit violent crimes again.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it there. It is 1 o'clock. Brody, thank you again for being with us this afternoon. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Eric. I appreciate being on.
Enjoy the sunshine. Enjoy the weekend. It's 1 o'clock.
Thank you.